Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
And here we go, the bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, as you heard right there, the producers of this fine, fine radio station. Myself, Andrew Carlson, on the X at Carlson Radio. I'm flanked by my man, Brian McDonald, a.k.a. BMAC. You can find him on the X at Sacked by BMAC. Sean Mapes to my left, at Sean A. Mapes on the X, and the incomparable Josh Chavans.
Whoa. That's a hell of an intro.
That is high
Josh,
praise.
You got incomparable.
The incomparable Josh Chavans. Setting the vibes for
Sean
us tonight.
Sean and I didn't get incomparable.
No. No, we're very comparable. I think we're comparable mostly to each other, but wow, Josh.
That's true, yeah.
Look, Josh does a good job setting the vibe, so he got the incomparable today.
Look, if I were going to do a Mount Rushmore plus one of Sunday producers here at 97.5, I would only need one list. It'd be Josh. I wouldn't even make the rest of the list.
It'd be a terrible Mount Rushmore.
I would just say Josh, and then I'd move on.
Yeah. Is there any reason why the music is still playing?
Because it's raging, it's amazing. Because
he's getting a suck fest right now. He doesn't feel the need to do his job.
How dare you question the incomparable Josh?
We're about to take away that incomparable real quick here, as Josh just let the music play for 10 minutes.
Yeah, he's like, man, keep it going, guys.
RIP incomparable status.
If you want to get in on anything we have to say today, the HRMP listener line is the way to do that. You can do that 713-780-3776. I would say text us, but none of us have access to the text line, so just give us a ring if you want to talk about anything that we're discussing over the course of the next couple hours as we talk with you here. But, guys, I feel like there's only really one place for us to start, and that's with, obviously, the Astros. I think we've started, our last 6 or 7 shows with, most likely. And I was fully out on the Astros after what happened to them on Friday night. That walk-off was among the most painful losses they've had this season. They've had their fair share of painful losses, but they always find a way to bring me back in. Just when you think you're out, they find a way to bring me back in. And that 9-2 win was probably about as good a response as you could have ever asked for, right?
Yeah, and selfishly, I felt the loss of Friday even more than you guys because I have Ryan Presley on my fantasy team. So selfishly, I was not only mad because the Astros lost a game in the standings, but he killed my ERA for this week. But yeah, I think this is kind of another classic example of the danger of one-game sample sizes in a way, because we've seen this Astros team, hell, the team last year that won the World Series, didn't they get swept by the A's at one point in August, I think it was? Look, it was obviously a bad loss, and there are lots of things that we can point to, and we'll certainly get to over the course of the show as reasons to be concerned about this Astros team compared to, other Astros teams during this run. But, yeah, it showed last night. They showed they're still a very good offense. They're top 10 in both run score this season and team ERA, so they're a very good team. And, there's concerns and red flags, but they're still capable of crushing opponents on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, I think a lot of this does stem from the fact that this is the first time the Astros have been in a legitimate pennant race since 2016?
Yeah, when they lost the pennant race.
When they didn't even make the playoffs?
Yeah.
So when they did not make the playoffs. Weird.
Put that evil on us, Sean.
And maybe that's why, like you said, every game Astros Twitter is having a meltdown or a
coronation. Every night it's a meltdown or a coronation. Yeah.
So I think that that's part of it, is just the fact that, we're not used to having to watch the standings. And so when there is a day where the Astros have a chance to get the AL West lead, like it means anything with 30 something games left remaining. But when they fail to get the lead, everyone freaks out.
Yeah,
everyone freaks out.
It's so weird because, again, like you were just pointing out, it's this nightly, you know, they're done or coronation because, and I think you nailed it, Sean. I think this is a product of 2017, there was no division race. 2019, there was no division race. Last year, there was no division race. We've been kind of spoiled as Astros fans that at this point of the season, you could go ahead and start looking at playoff matches because the division race is over. So I don't think this team is necessarily any or considerably worse than the teams that came before it. I just think the competition around them is better, and that's what's causing some of this panic.
See, I disagree that they're not considerably worse than the teams that have come before. I think it's very clear that this Astros team is significantly worse than basically every other team they've had in this dynastic run, bar the pandemic season. Like, the starting pitching is the worst that the Astros have had in probably half a decade. I don't really think that's super arguable. The lineup has been inconsistent. I think, by and large, this lineup is good and better than some of the lineups that they've had in the past. The problem is health has led to inconsistencies. And the bullpen is, again, it's a top five bullpen, but it's not what they had last season, which, again, is part of a product of the fact that the starting pitching just simply is not what it has been in years past.
I think talking about, is this team better or worse, comparing them to other teams, it is, like, similar talent-wise to last year's team. I mean, it's mostly the same guys, but the actual production of this team, what these guys have actually done out there, it hasn't lived up to the expectations because it is so inconsistent. There are games where they lose 17-1 and then come back and win 9-2. Like, they have those ebbs and flows that other Astros teams in this run did not have.
So as we take stock of where the Astros are right now currently, and you look at the playoff picture, they're a game back of Texas and Seattle, who are tied atop the AL West, at least record-wise. Both those teams have played two less games than the Astros. In the wild card race, they currently hold the third wild card spot. They're a game and a half up on the Blue Jays for that final wild card spot. The Blue Jays have played one less game than the Astros. Like, look, it's not inconceivable that the Astros don't make the playoffs. Like, look, do I think that they're going to miss out on the playoffs? No, that they have a relatively favorable schedule down the stretch. I believe they play the Royals six times, and they have three more games against the A's. So nine of their remaining, you know, what, 30-odd games are against teams that have really, really awful records. And I'm not saying that should be nine wins, but that should be seven or eight wins that you're budgeting right there. So I'm not saying that it's likely they don't make the playoffs, but like you guys mentioned, there's some concern here. How are you guys feeling as you take stock of where the Astros are with their competitors, both in the AL West and the wildcard race?
Look, I might be, you know, wearing the orange-colored glasses, but I still don't believe I know they're not as good as 2019. They're not as good as last year, but I would still push back a little bit that they're drastically different. They're top 10 in ERA. They're top 10 in runs scored. Altuve's having a great run here. Bregman's having a great run. Kyle Tucker's having a year in which we're talking about giving him a $300 million contract. Yonder Diaz, although he doesn't play enough, is having a great year. Really, the only thing that I would point to as far as this concerns is obviously Javier / Hunter Brown, and then Yordan Alvarez struggling since he's returned. So there are some things there that are concerning, but I do think this team, as constructed, is capable of making run. But specifically looking at who's around them in the playoff race, what you mentioned, some of the Astros schedule going down the stretch with the Royals and the A's. I was looking at the Blue Jays stretch. So they're currently finishing off a series against the Guardians. And then their next four series after that are the Nationals, Rockies, Royals, and Athletics.
Ooh.
So, look.
That's nice.
Yeah, and they're, what, 1.5 game behind you right now in the standings? So the Astros are going to have some work to do to hold the Blue Jays off. And now the Blue Jays do get a little bit of a tougher stretch. After that, after that run over the next four series, they have the Rangers and the Red Sox for seven games, and five of their last eight are against the Rays. So there is some, you know, back and forth here, but at least over these next four series, the Astros are really going to have to play well to keep the Blue Jays from passing them.
That is all correct. So for me, what I've been looking at is the division the entire way.
You said screw the wild card. We're going for the division.
Basically, I mean, it is more beneficial to win the division. Oh, yeah. And they're only a game out.
No, Sean, the season is over. Astros Twitter told me the season is over.
And so, what is really not only the Astros schedule coming up that Andrew so eloquently, incomparably listed out there.
That's the second incomparable today. Wow.
But then you also look at the Seattle Mariners, who for my money right now, like, They are playing the best baseball on planet Earth.
I feel like that kind of started when you wore a Seattle Mariners shirt last week.
That's not true.
There might be a tie into that.
Look, they're definitely not 22-8 over their last 30 games. They're winning. They won all these 30 games in the last week. All right?
Erroneous on all accounts.
I'm curious what the record is when you're not wearing a Mariners shirt.
I never wore a Seattle Mariners shirt. I would never wear a Seattle Mariners shirt. Now, talking about the Seattle Mariners, they do finish.
Your favorite team.
Just imagining Sean with Trump hands. I never talked about the Seattle Mariners.
I did inadvertently start doing politician hand a little bit.
They are not my favorite team. Sorry, Sean, go ahead.
Can we talk about the Seattle Mariners schedule?
Yeah, I know you'd love to.
The last 10 games of the season, the last 10 games of the Mariners season, they end with 3 against the Texas Rangers, they end with 3 against the Houston Astros, and then they finish with a 4-gamer against Texas. So there is 10 games against the AL West, the Seattle Mariners' last 10 games, 7 of which are against the Texas Rangers. So for the Astros, one of those teams is going to have to start taking losses in the last 10 games of the season.
That's the biggest point that you brought up there.
I was finally able to make. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, pretty good when I get an opportunity.
Like the fact that one of those teams is Sean turned his mic
to turn off his microphone. What you don't see because you're listening on the radio is Sean's trying to punch the off button emphatically.
Very frustrated. I hit the on button. But it's the opposite of what I wanted.
That was not incomparable.
That Sean so incomparably and eloquently made there, as he would have probably told me, is that one of those teams is going to cannibalize the other. Like, one of those teams is going to eat the other up. And even if they split, that's still probably beneficial for the Astros, right? The fact that those teams are going to be taking wins off one another in that last final stretch very likely means, unless for whatever reason in their other 20 games outside of that final stretch, one of them is going to take, like, one of the Mariners or Rangers is going to take that other team out of the running when we get to that final stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to believe if the Astros are within a game or two going into that stretch where the Mariners and the Rangers are playing each other 7 times, if you get like a 4-3 split or a 5-2 split, you would definitely have a chance, because obviously at least two of these teams are getting into the playoffs, possibly even all 3. So if you're able to play well while another team goes 2-5 against the others, being that Mariners-Rangers stretch, then you would certainly be able to pass them if you're only a game or two down.
Absolutely.
So even if they're just right behind, there's an opportunity to make that up.
Oh, 100%, 100%. So we're going to keep the Astros discussion rolling as we move along here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 as BMAC shows Sean how you properly turn off your microphone.
There's the mic stand stuff, so I had to kind of go around it. I was also very flustered. Anyway. Take us to break, Andrew.
If you want to get in on anything we have to say today, 713-780-3776 is the best way to do that. That's the HR&P listener line. We're going to sort of dive into what has gone wrong with the Astros this past week, and is there a way to fix some of it? That's all up next. Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it down in my plums. They're getting a nice bluish hue.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen is back here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Andrew Carlson, flanked by my man Brian McDonald, flanked by my man Sean Mapes. The Astros conversation is going to continue here in just a moment, and we're going to get through some of the negative before we get to the positive. Now, I understand this isn't worst people of the week and what we love from sports this week, where we, what is it, doggy paddle? Or are we doing the backstroke?
Swim with the anger sharks and then backstroke to the sea of tranquility.
Yeah, okay. I'll let Sean say that, because if I try to say it, I'll keep saying backpedal.
I completely jacked the the entire little phrase that you came up with.
You broke my brain trying to readjust the phrasing, yes.
One of the things that has sort of broken my brain, unfortunately, this week, is something that we were talking about in the group text as we were preparing for the show over the course of the week. And last week we discussed, myself specifically, how J.P. France, I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? Because he's such an unheralded prospect, and this has been such a fantastic Cinderella sort of story for a pitcher that really had not a ton of prospects for him. It looked like sort of was just going to be a lifelong AAA, quad A type guy. Got his opportunity with the Astros in his you know, excelled beyond anyone's wildest dreams. He had the worst start by far of his young major league career thus far, getting shelled by the Red Sox earlier in the week. Is there any concern that he has finally sort of hit a wall, or that that other shoe that we talked about last week has sort of dropped with J.P. France, and like his performance is not going to be what it was moving forward?
I don't think we're going to – you mentioned the term like quad A player. I don't think we're going to see with J.P. France what's happened with John Singleton where, you know, okay, Singleton is mashing and looks like Babe Ruth at AAA, then he comes up and hits 140.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's what we're going to see from J.P. France simply because it's been – look, I know it's not even a full game, a full season sample size, but it's been, what, like 15 games, like close to 100 inning sample size with J.P. France. To me, that's long enough to make me believe that he's at least going to be a competitive pitcher on this level. Certainly, like we talked about last week, like if he had qualified, he would be the second in all of baseball in ERA behind Blake Snell. It was like 275 was a season-long ERA. That's not sustainable. He's not going to pitch to a 275 ERA in that 10-run game that Andrew and I talked about this in the bullpen, shot his ERA all the way up to 275 to 350.
Yeah.
That's more reasonable for J.P. France long-term. So really, that just took his numbers to where he probably could be, and maybe even a little bit further down, I would see even say high threes. So I don't think France, like, I don't think we're going to see France give up another 10 runs. I wish his next start wasn't against the same opponent who seemed to have something on him. Maybe they could have skipped the start and pushed him back to the Yankee series that comes after the Red Sox. But my I do have concern just on the innings limits. I don't think his stuff is necessarily going to get worse. I don't think he's going to be a trash pitcher like he was when he gave up 10 runs. But I do have some concern. Like, he's a triple-A pitcher. These guys aren't throwing 150 innings every year. So, I mean, he's been that. I mean, he's 28. He's been that for, obviously, a long time now. So a lot of these Astros pitchers are starting to kind of hit, you know, innings walls, and France might be near one.
Yeah, the innings wall for the team as a whole is more concerning than the innings wall for J.P. France, like, specifically, just because, like BMAC said, like, it is funny that we are talking about a guy's track record where he's a 28-year-old rookie, and we're talking about, like, 15 starts, 20 starts into his career, but that Boston Red Sox start, like, no pitcher is actually that bad. Like, no real major league pitcher that gets outs is as bad as that.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was basically Maldonado when he was tossing up there.
Exactly. So I think that him facing the Red Sox again will be, like, a good test for him. That would be a good kind of get-yourself-back-on-track situation. But I maybe have lowered expectations. Like, we were talking about a couple weeks ago, the postseason rotation and where J.P. France slots in that. Maybe we can table that discussion for a little bit. Next time we talk about it, he probably won't be as high as we were talking about then. So I think in that way, it changed the way I think about J.P. France, but as a whole, not really. I'm not worried about him.
So you wouldn't put J.P. France at number three in your playoff rotation right now, or would you still pencil him in there, but it's now in pencil versus pen?
It might be three, but because of the other guys.
Yeah.
The other guys in the rotation.
And it might be three because they're starting off the series on the road, and I want him starting at home versus
that too.
Yeah.
So as we discuss some of the starters, the question that I've sort of been pondering really over the course of not just this week, but really the season is it's been so up and down for the Astros this year is that do you guys believe the starters are good enough to get this team where they want to go? Because that's a question that I've really been not happy with the answer as I've asked it to myself, because genuinely, I don't know if this Astros rotation is good enough to take this team where they ultimately want to go, which is repeating as World Series champions. You look at the last seven games, you extend it for the last 2 weeks, it's even more stark. But the last seven games, the Astros bullpen has pitched more than half the available innings for the team. And if you're supposed to be in a six-man rotation where you're taking an arm out of that bullpen and putting it into the rotation, that's not a sustainable process for this team where we're talking about guys already hitting innings walls, not just in the starting rotation, but in the bullpen as well. To have the bullpen pitching that many innings on a consistent basis, like, that's not sustainable for this team and the success that they hope and want to have.
Yeah, and look, I actually agree with Dusty's decision to pull Hunter Brown last night after 91 pitches because of what we've talked about, like the innings walls with some of these guys. But that it does go back to your point. I mean, Dusty's talked about how important it is for guys to go deep in the game, and Hunter Brown through five innings, 91 pitches, he has to get pulled from the game because you want to save Hunter Brown's arm. But then now you're talking, you know, four innings for the bullpen. Thankfully, they had Ronel Blanco to throw two innings, and it was a 9-2 game, and they had a little bit of lead there to play with. But yeah, it's going to create some taxing games for the bullpen if you know, Javier can only get through four, and Hunter Brown can only get through five, and Urquidy, who knows at this point, he's been very up and down since he returned. Look, there's obviously a lot of concern. Like, Javier is clearly not the same pitcher he was last year. But the best Astros rotation that I think they've had during this run, going back to 2017, has been 2019 when Verlander and Cole were gods on the mound, both throwing like 250 innings and like 1-2 in the Cy Young, and that team didn't win the World Series. I mean, should have won if A.J. Hinch had made the right decision in the bullpen. But
could have used the next.
used Garrett Cole, and, or at least kept Greinke in. But I mean, that team was probably the best rotation they've had, and they didn't even win the World Series. So I think I still trust Verlander. This feels more and more shaky to say, you know, as the weeks go by, but I still trust Fromber, I think.
That didn't sound confident.
No.
That didn't sound like trust.
Right, let me try that.
It almost sounded like you said it like through tears.
Let me try that again. I trust. No, I did. I couldn't pull
yeah,
it off. No,
inflection was off.
I do trust Fromber Valdez. There we go. That was strong. That was firm. I think that was more believable.
Sort of.
Okay. All right. Well, I trust Verlander. Not in the World Series. I trust Valdez for the most part. And, you know, look, I think Hunter Brown can at least give you, you know, a quality start in the postseason. Javier, I'm done with at this point. I think France can be in that kind of quality start, you know, six innings, three runs sort. So I think they have enough to get to the World Series. I still think they're at a pitching disadvantage, though, specifically against the Mariners and Braves. And that probably means they don't win the World Series.
Yeah, I think these guys... it's like what I talked about in the first segment, where they have the talent. These guys are good enough to be a great starting rotation for the Astros. They just haven't actually done it. They haven't actually done it this season to give me hope that they will do it the last 6 weeks of the season and into the postseason. So that is kind of my hang up of why there is like a little bit of like weird cognitive dissonance. Every time Fromber Valdez goes out there, in my mind, I have a part of me that's like, oh, this is 20-something straight quality starts for Fromber Valdez. He hasn't been that guy definitely since July.
Yeah, for 2 months.
He has not been that guy. So it is having to, like, change your expectations for this team. And like you said, when these guys can't go deep in games, it just adds more taxation to the bullpen. And so it is a problem that compounds on itself.
Yeah, and so, Sean, looking at the rotation, I know BMAC mentioned the players that he would relatively trust. Is there anyone outside of JV? And would you even trust JV in a playoff setting right now? Like, genuinely, is there a single pitcher in this rotation where you look at it and you're like, yes, I 100% have confidence in that guy taking the mound in a do-or-die playoff scenario, which is something that if the Astros are in a wild card game or wild card series, they're very likely to be facing.
They're pretty close to one, yeah. I don't think you can say before saying Justin Verlander and actually meet it. I'll say it like this. Justin Verlander is the guy in the rotation that I trust the most.
Okay.
I do not know if I have 100% faith in him. Maybe it's 95, maybe it's 90, but I do have a lot of faith in Justin Verlander in a do or die game. After him, not much.
Yeah,
not looking so hot. Maybe
it's
Fromber.
Not the confidence we had last year.
Yeah,
these guys.
Yeah. I mean, Fromber was working on no hitter 2 nights ago.
It's unbelievable the ups and downs this guy's been on.
I was hoping he would finish it off just so he could have no hitter, absolute dog bleep, and then no hitter.
Yeah, so he has no hitter. the other night it was seven innings of no hit ball.
Oh yeah,
before he left the game, because he was over 100 pitches. So outside of those 16 innings, the other 50 or whatever it's been for him since like going back to late June,
it's terrible.
It's just unreal the ups and downs this guy's been on.
All right, so despite all that negativity that we've just been spewing out here for the last,
see
you
tranquility.
You know, 10 minutes. Yeah, we're backstroking to the sea of tranquility next, baby. There's hope on the horizon for the Astros, and some of that might be in the form of Michael Brantley. We're going to discuss that. Could he finally be making his return to the Astros, as well as why the lineup just gives us so much confidence moving forward? That's all coming up next on the bullpen. I'm Andrew. He's BMAC. He's Sean. Josh behind the glass. We'll be back in 3 minutes. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Take his pork chop.
I don't want his pork chop. I want his life. is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen is back here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We got you guys till noon here on this glorious Houston Sunday. It's hot as all hell outside, but you know what? We're nice and cool inside for once. You know, the air conditioning's been working for multiple weeks in a row here.
Like
so.
3 weeks in a row. It's a hell of a streak we got going.
Before we talk about the building in such glowing terms, we were supposed to do a show yesterday.
That's
and
true.
And why did that not happen, Andrew?
Well, the power was out in the building. And okay, you know what? Thankfully, they didn't have us up here doing a show while the power was out.
Yeah. Well,
Josh, I think Josh had come up here,
someone
right?
Someone fell on the sword for us.
Well, Josh had to be up here for other stuff anyway.
Oh, you were running a, what, was it going to be John Clay Wolf?
It was supposed to be John Clay Wolf, and then I had to enter what's Eric's eating into the system. And also,
you couldn't get into the building, right?
I could not get into the building until 11 o'clock.
Oh, so Houston got robbed of 2 hours of listening to the Wolfpack?
Absolutely.
That is a tragedy.
And for the record, I'm sure as you guys can imagine, there was no AC yesterday.
No, I would have guessed that.
Well, you know what, Josh? Thank you for your service.
We appreciate you.
You're incomparable, Josh. I'm going to put that back on you.
Thank you so much.
That's Josh behind the glass, for those of you who do not know. He's at IMJ Chevy on the X. I'm Andrew Carlson at Carlson Radio. I've got Brian McDonald, my man to my right, on the X at Sacked by BMAC. Sean A. Mapes on the X at Sean A. Mapes is to my left. So, guys, as the Astros conversation rolls along here, something that I teased before the break and something that I'm sort of surprised and flummoxed by is the fact that Michael Brantley is not back with the Astros yet. I understand that Dusty and Michael Brantley apparently had a conversation where Brantley said he just doesn't feel quite right yet and he's not ready. But frankly, if I'm Dana Brown, if physically he says he's right, I almost throw him back in there anyway. You look at what he's doing in AAA. Like, he's in his seven games in this rehab stint that he's had. He's in 348, OPS over 1,000, two doubles, a home run, has not struck out yet, has walked four times. I mean, this is Uncle Mike at his best. He's a professional hitter. He's looked like that in AAA with the Space Cowboys. I fully believe that it's time to have him back in the Astros lineup. Maybe not on an everyday basis, but he needs to be a piece of this lineup moving forward, because I don't know how many at-bats he's got left in that shoulder. I would prefer for those at-bats to be with the Astros versus the Space Cowboys.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Andrew. And that was, I think, something I mentioned last week, or I might have mentioned when I was on with Patrick Creighton. I don't remember which show. But, yeah, I mean, we don't know how many swings Michael Brantley has left in that shoulder. You definitely would rather him taking those swings at minimum. If it's, I don't know, let's just throw out a number. If it's 200 swings he has left, let's have them happen at Minute Maid Park and in the major leagues instead of out of Constellation Field in Sugarland. So you mentioned his seven-game stretch. I haven't looked at the stats of all his games, but I know his first three games he had a hit in every game, including a home run in his first game. And last night he had another hit and a walk. So, look, even if Michael Brantley, quote, doesn't feel right, and let's say he's at 85% of Michael Brantley, that's still a better hitter than Jake Myers.
Still a better hitter than Corey Jolks.
That's still
who's
a better,
all of a sudden
hitter,
been
still a better
left field.
Hitter than personal center fielder for Justin Verlander, Mauricio Dubon. So, yeah, I mean, Michael Brantley, I mean, look, I think it was last week we talked about the death lineup for the Astros, and that would be in regards to Michael Brantley returning and what he does for this lineup. I mean, if you're talking, because we've looked at this lineup sometimes when it comes out, and you look at 7, 8, 9, like, God, all right, they're giving away some outs here with Dubon and Myers and Maldonado. But if suddenly you replace one of those guys with Michael Brantley, the lineup just gets longer, gets more difficult for the starting pitchers. You maybe knock that starting pitcher out early in the game, get into the bullpen, and this offense, which has already been good in the second half, could get even better once Michael Brantley returns.
Yeah, I know this might not be the most like moral or morally correct thing.
I'm intrigued.
Which is a great way to start a baseball conversation. But yeah, like, you need those at-bats right now. Like, this is not this should not be some sustainable plan for Michael Brantley. This is, he's good to go right now. We need you right now.
Yeah, he's on a one-year contract.
If he doesn't make it to November, don't care. Like, do
damn,
not care.
Yeah.
You know what it kind of reminds me of?
Do not care if his shoulder does not make it to November. I do care if Michael Brantley. I hope he lives
that's
long
big
and wonderful
you.
Life.
That's
thank,
big
you.
Of you.
Thank you. Thank you,
everyone. He might not be able to pick up someone like his kid because of his shoulder, but yeah, at least he's still alive.
He has another shoulder.
He can pick him up with his other arm.
God gave you two, Michael. Use the other one.
Yeah, I mean, again, I hope nothing for the best for Michael Brantley. I hope this is not true.
Doesn't sound like it.
I hope this is not true. But it, sometimes in life, this will also be unpopular. You have to look and you have
sometimes
to,
you have to sacrifice the guy's shoulder for the greater good.
I love how Sean is giving life lessons right now. Sometimes in life.
Sometimes when running a baseball team, mostly, you have to ask yourself, what would Jeff Luhnow do?
Run him into the ground.
Jeff Luhnow would grab him by the shoulder and throw him into the batter's box, all right?
Take some hacks, big guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why Luhnow sounded like that, by the way.
He doesn't sound like that. But, yeah, I mean, really, this lineup, like you guys said, they need Michael Brantley. Even if he doesn't, if he's physically ready to go, put him out there.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me. Look what happens in football when running backs near the end of their contract, like with Josh Jacobs, going into his last year. Suddenly he gets like 350 carries.
Yeah,
I mean,
DeMarco Murray back in the
day. It's a team selfish view. It's probably not best for the player, but for this team, yeah. I mean, if we don't know how many hacks he's got left, put him out there and let him. I mean, he's on a 1-year contract. He's gone at the end of the year, pretty much no matter what. Let's get him out there hitting for the Astros and not the Space Cowboys.
Also, the injury risk when it comes to swinging a bat is the exact same whether you're doing it in a Sugarland Space Cowboys uniform or a Houston Astros uniform.
No, 100%. And like on top of all of that, like it's not like Michael Brantley has a bunch of MLB career left to salvage. Like you guys mentioned, right? Like I think almost assuredly this is his last year playing Major League Baseball.
Good chance of
And it's like if I'm Michael Brantley – he's won a World Series ring with the Astros, but he hasn't gotten to truly contribute to a team that's won a World Series in a postseason run. I'm sure that there is a large part of him that's like, man, I just want to really go back out there and get out there and help my team potentially win another World Series versus sitting on the pine and just being like the advisor/hitting coach for another postseason run.
Yeah, I mean, last year, I mean, I've always wondered that about with athletes like Brantley. I mean, he was on the team last year. I think he left the team in, what, June maybe? Maybe it was early July?
I think it was June or July.
So he obviously contributed to a World Series team, but I've always wondered with athletes like that who, once the postseason started, he obviously had no impact at all, had no impact down the stretch either, in September. Like, do they I assume they wear the ring. I assume they still take pride in the title that they were on the team for, but it's just not the same as if you're actually on the field. And besides all that, like you said, Sean, I mean, you pointed out well. I mean, it's the obvious statement, but it's true. You're no more likely to get hurt swinging a bat here than you are in Sugarland. Yeah. So help the team now. Let's get Jake Myers off the field.
Yeah, if it
that sounded like a personal campaign against Jake Myers.
God,
I'm BMAC here against Jake
BMAC
Myers.
BMAC 2024. Get Jake Myers off the field.
I thought I was going to be the one that absolutely shanks an MLB player. I mean, it'd be one thing if, like earlier this season, if he started his rehab assignment, something wasn't right, and he stopped his rehab assignment. He's still playing games for the Sugarland Space Cowboys that you can hear on ESPN 92.5. The fact that he's not replacing – see, your ire is towards Jake Myers. Mine is towards former Houston Cougar Corey Jones.
No, you're forever a Coug. Like
I am forever – Coug to Coug, Corey Jones.
Number one Coug fan, Sean Mays.
Again, Coug to Coug, Corey Jones.
Yeah, camera one. There you go.
What's best for this team is Michael Brantley to be in your roster spot. I'm sorry. That's just the truth. Hey, at this point, the way you're playing right now is Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley is who should be on the Major League roster.
Difficult conversations with Sean Mapes.
I'm sorry I had to do it in public.
Coug to Coug with Sean Mapes. I think that's going to debut on the lineup here in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
Maybe
Sean
middays.
Mapes and Paul Gallant, the two most legendary Cougars at our station. Yeah.
The Coug Hour.
Coug Hour.
Now, hunting with Sean Mapes.
Hold on. Can I tag along for that one?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Josh will produce that show.
As we look at the lineup as a whole, though, when they've been close to fully healthy, obviously minus Michael Brantley, the lineup has started to perform, especially in the second half of the season, significantly closer to what we expected them to be at the beginning of the year. Alex Bregman has finally got his OPS over 800. And I could be wrong here. I could be the reactionary Astros fan. Like, there's 100% a chance that is because I live and die with every game, like all of Astros Twitter. So I'm probably not the best sounding board for all of this. But I genuinely feel like the lineup has turned some sort of a corner, because maybe it's not every single night they're putting up 5-plus runs, but I feel like on a much more consistent basis now, you're getting the production that you expected to get at the start of the season.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about in a previous segment, as to why I was still confident in this team. I mean, Altuve had that 14-game hitting streak, had it snapped, and then has still been hitting really well after that. Yonner Diaz and Chaz McCormick have kind of come out of nowhere for this team, both putting up great slash lines and showing more power, showing really, frankly, probably 30 home run power if they had gotten regular at-bats the entire season. And Alex Bregman, who you mentioned, now has a season-long OPS over 800. Since the All-Star break, I looked at the stats. He's hitting .303, .961 OPS. With 9 homers and 31 RBI over 40 games, which over 162-game pace is 36 home runs, 126 RBI, a.k.a. basically Alex Bregman at his full powers in 2019 when he hit over 40 home runs. He's basically, since the All-Star break, hitting like 2019 Alex Bregman. So you add that to what I just said with Altuve, Tucker having a year that we want to give him a $350 million contract for, Chaz hitting really well, Yarner hitting well, knock on wood, hopefully Yordan turns around, you get Michael Brantley back. This offense really becomes dangerous.
And when your offense becomes dangerous like that, you know what you need less of?
Pitching.
Pitching. And going back to
how... I was hoping you're going to say Jake Myers.
You're always hoping I'm going to say Jake Myers.
No, he's going to say Corey Jolks.
No,
in his campaign
no.
against Corey Jolks.
Okay. Now it seems like it's personal between you and Corey Jolks. That's
just because
unfair.
You hate the Cougars, Andrew, doesn't mean you have to go after Corey Jolks.
I had to have the uncomfortable conversation. For those of you listening, Andrew Carlson now, I think now all three of us have emphatically turned off our mic and backed away.
Question of my love for the Cougs.
Which means it's been a great 40 minutes of radio that all three of us have been so frustrated at some point that we turn off
our mic. If that's not happening, we're not doing radio right.
Yeah. So basically, hey, listen, Michael Brantley comes back, lineup gets deeper. You feel good about these guys when they're at full health. That means that you need a little bit less out of Fromber. You need to, like last year's postseason, they're winning a lot of games, 2-1, 2-0, 1-0. You this team with that lineup won't have to do that because they will be scoring more runs.
Now, I might be crazy for saying this in some degree, because if you had asked me this question 2.5 months ago, I would have said, yeah, you're absolutely insane. But do you trust this lineup more than any other aspect of the team right now? Because I genuinely believe that I trust the lineup to produce to a certain degree more than I do the current starting pitching staff or the bullpen. Like, I genuinely believe that moving forward, this lineup is the best part of this team.
With how they're playing right now, I think that is true. Definitely because on any given night, you don't know what you're getting from any of these starting pitchers. Like if Fromber's on, you feel good about Fromber. If JV's on, you feel good about JV. If France, funny that he's the third person. If France is pitching like he has, excluding his last start for the last couple months, you feel good. You'd be like, that's a good starting rotation, but you don't know what you're going to get from Fromber.
The coin boys, they're just flipping the coin, and then, you know, he gets
the coin has spoken, 10 runs. I'm sorry. The offense does seem more, at least bankable, that, you know, between Yordan, Bregman, Altuve, one of these guys is going to go off for a big night.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in 100% agreement. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get from Javier start.
You know exactly where you're going to get.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's been pretty consistent. I mean, Urquidy, I mean, Hunter Brown, a lot of these guys are up and down. Even in the bullpen, obviously, Maton not been pitching well, is now coming, might come back from the IL today. Presley obviously just gave up 4 runs in his last outing. So that bullpen, even guys who were dominant last year like Brian Abreu, he's been good recently again, but he had a stretch of about 3 weeks where his ERA was over 4. So there's been a lot of inconsistency there where, as this lineup, especially if you get Brantley back and Yordan finds his swing again, I think that's going to be way more consistent than their starting rotation or the bullpen.
That's Brian McDonald. He's to my right. Sean Mapes is to my left. I'm Andrew Carlson. This is the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're about to hit a break here, and when we get back, the Texans play their final preseason game to warm up for the actual regular season later today. What are the expectations for that game? CJ Stroud is starting. Is that a good decision? We're going to dive into all of that and much more next. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN
97.5. Dragons!
Damn it, Leroy.
Leroy, you were just stupid.
At least I have chicken.
This is the Bullpen, live.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We are back here on the bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson alongside Sean Mapes and Brian McDonald. And, of course, the incomparable Josh Chavan setting the vibes through the glass on the 1-2s and 3s as I try and get through every single old cliched
1-2s and 3s.
I don't know.
2s and 3s.
That's the.
Are we going to make references to cutting tape next with razor blades?
No, we just got to go through all the old radio okay. cliches all that right. we refer to a producer here. I mean, he actually is through the glass. I know a lot of producers these days aren't through the glass, but Josh is actually through the glass, so I guess we get to still use that one. But before the break, we teased a little bit about talk about the Texans and their final preseason game coming up later today. So the Texans have canceled their joint practice, and this is not a surprise to anybody. They canceled their joint practice earlier this week with the Saints, and they've basically been in regular season mode this whole week. There's been extremely limited media access. You don't get that same sort of training camp vibe. There hasn't been any of that this past week, and generally speaking, with the fact that they have sort of moved to regular season mode a little bit earlier on this week, what are your expectations? What do you really want to see from this final preseason game? I know D'Amico's talked about the starters are going to play for two series, but what do you want to see from the Texans in those two series that we get from the starters?
Starting with the offense, I just don't want it to look like the Patriots game, yeah. right? They came out in the Patriots game, and C.J. Stroud only had two regular starting offensive linemen there in front of him with Scruggs and Kenyon Green. And he was, I think we talked about the stats last week, he was under pressure on his dropback 60% of the time. They put in Titus Howard, and I'm blanking on the guard all of a sudden that they put back into, not Titus Howard, Laramie Tunsil and Shaq Mason. Yes, thank you, Sean. They put them back into the lineup, and all of a sudden that number drops from 60% down to 16%, right? And what we saw in that second drive, because the first drive was a short field after the interception by Perryman, but what we saw in that second drive with the motion and Nico Collins and Robert Woods splitting out from the backfield and some of the play-action throws that we saw C.J. Stroud make to Noah Brown, one that he dropped where he evaded pressure. Everything about that second drive, and obviously it ended in a field goal, so it could have been better, but almost everything about that second drive other than ending in a field goal looked like an offense that should be very exciting to watch during the regular season. Certainly there's going to be growing pains because it's a rookie quarterback and the wide receivers aren't of an elite caliber, let's say. But I think everything in that execution and their efficiency looks really promising. They took a big step forward. I just don't want to see them take a step back to the Patriots game.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking along the same lines. D'Amico Ryan said, we'll see. As of right now, our plan is to get the first guys probably about two series and see how it goes and allow the young guys to have a lot of work in the game, which, I mean, your young guys are starters, so I don't know how much
it's weird now because before they eliminated the fourth preseason game, no starters ever played.
Right.
And it was basically, let's just evaluate the guys that are like 45 through 53 on the roster.
Yeah.
So I guess game three, which kind of back in the day was the dress rehearsal, where I remember Kubiak years, they would play three quarters in that third game. Certainly not going to happen tonight, as you said, Sean, but it's an interesting balance of making sure the offense in particular stays sharp, but also getting a look at the back end of your roster.
Yeah. And I expect something, again, like we saw that second Miami Dolphins series, where I want to see them move the ball, and then when they do, and I want to see them move the ball into the red zone, although 50-yard touchdown, I wouldn't be upset about. But I want to see them move into the red zone and have, like, a clean red zone possession, like we didn't see in their first possession in that Miami Dolphins game. So basically carry over the good stuff and then improve on where their shortcomings were in last week's game.
Yeah, I really want to see C.J. Stroud, lead a touchdown drive in the two series that he gets. Like, obviously, like, that should be no surprise to anybody, but the fact that we've really only seen him have one, what I would consider, really super successful drive thus far from a, offensive operations standpoint, give me two really clean series, and one of them leads to a touchdown. Bryce Young threw his first touchdown of the preseason. I believe just yesterday. So, like, give me one touchdown drive, and I will be very, very happy with what I've seen from C.J. Stroud, not just in this game coming up later today, but the preseason as a whole, because generally speaking, I feel like I'm more positive about C.J. Stroud and the offense after what I've seen this preseason than I was heading into training camp. Like, there were some questions about the talent around C.J. Stroud that I don't know if they've necessarily been answered, but I feel more positive about them than I did before this preseason got started.
And kind of extending on that point, Andrew, I'd like to see some of, like, we saw a really good game in week one of the preseason from Tank Dell. Go Cougs. We saw, I mean, Sean's got to feel that even more, because he's obviously the biggest Coug fan in the building right now. Andrew, noted Coug hater. In week two, we saw, obviously, Noah Brown have a good catch, although he dropped one later. Nico Collins looked pretty good at times. So I'd like to see that next group of receivers. I don't know who, like, who's the number one on this team? I some people have said it's going to be
the
Nico
open
Collins.
Man.
Yeah, basically, it's kind of how it feels like it's going to be. But I'd like to see maybe John Metchie have a nice game. Maybe Noah Brown even go a step further. Like, I like the week one performance from Tank Dell. I like Nico Collins in week two, but we need to see that second guy. And the kind of same thing on defense. Will Anderson's looked great. He's looked great in his pass rush. And I thought Sheldon Rankins has looked great against the run. But where are the other guys around them? Who's the other guy creating a pass rush? Who's the other guy stopping the run when Sheldon Rankins is out? Because once Rankins went out, the Dolphins ran all over him.
Yeah, I think that is, going back to the offense, that is a good point of you want to see some of these other young guys, because we've talked about how it's a whole bunch of young guys that are like Madden 74 overall players.
Pretty much, yeah.
Where you just want to have one of them pop, really.
Yeah,
and so
that's a good way to describe it.
You had Tank Dell pop, go Cougs. You had an impressive showing from Nico Collins. Anytime Nico Collins makes plays that isn't in practice, it is pretty impressive. So to see something from Noah Brown, from John Metchie, yeah, that is a good point of like that would really – And if they can pop and then one of these guys can carry it over into the regular season, that would actually have me feeling much better about the offense. Because like Andrew said, when they have the actual offensive line starters in there, the offense has not looked bad. Now, they are very shallow, so maybe late in the year, if God forbid something happens to Laramie Tunsil or Titus Howard.
Please stop, Sean. Don't put this out in the ether.
Go ahead and emphatically turn off your microphone and stop
your
point.
I just want to see some stuff from Austin Deculus.
All right.
Well, you know, they've traded for Josh Jones, so hopefully that won't be a problem. Another go Cougs there, former Houston Cougar offensive lineman.
You're just pandering to Sean now. Yeah.
Yeah, Sean, you want to turn your mic back on for that?
No, Josh turned off my mic for me.
Thank you, Josh.
I'm being deplatformed.
Incomparable job.
I am being deplatformed. I am being silenced.
This show has been something else today, guys. But, yeah, I think that you're 100% right, both of you, in terms of just you need somebody else to step up. Because the reality is this is going to be a by-committee approach for this team the entirety of this season. The only, I think, really reliable piece of offense that you're going to have from week to week is probably Dameon Pierce. Maybe Dalton Schultz gets thrown in that mix. But realistically,
if Schultz is someone I'd like to see something from, because he probably, maybe going into the preseason, going into the training camp, I mean, I know he's not a wide receiver, but he was probably the pass catcher we had. At least, I mean, Robert Woods has obviously had a good career, but he obviously has less in the tank than Dalton Schultz. So Schultz might have been the guy we were most like.
He was the most like bankable.
Yeah, and option. We really haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, and for a young quarterback, who's the safety valve always supposed to be? It's supposed to be their tight end, right? Like, we were expecting Dalton Schultz to be that for C.J. Stroud, and we haven't seen a ton of that thus far in the preseason yet. But obviously, Bobby Slowick's not going to show all his cards. And look, when the offense doesn't have that first team out there, like Sean mentioned, like, if it's C.J. Stroud out there with the twos and threes, especially when we're talking about the offensive line, look, they're just – he's not going to have time to do what he wants to do. And by and large, as long as Laramie Tunsil and crew are out there, I'm going to be very happy with C.J. Stroud being out there. But like, if there's at any point in these couple of series that they're thinking about potentially running C.J. Stroud out there with guys who are not the ones on the offensive line, I want to shut that idea down immediately. Because we saw what that was in the Patriots game. It was close to being an unmitigated disaster. Just stay as far away from that as possible. If C.J. Stroud's out there, the ones need to be the ones out there.
Yeah, because, there is value in C.J. Stroud getting as many preseason reps as possible. But like we saw in the Patriots game, those reps are not valuable in any way.
No,
because
he got nothing out of that.
Yeah, because you're just getting your ass kicked. So there is no need for that, really.
100%.
All right, guys. So that wraps up hour number one here on the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. That's Sean Mapes to my left, B-Mac Brian McDonald to my right. I am Andrew Carlson. Coming up next, we've got some NFL chatter for you guys, a little odds and ends to tie up. Trey Lance is headed to Dallas. And we got to dig into just how much of a failure this draft pick was for the 49ers, as well as some other things in college football week zero. College football is officially back. Well, I guess sort of. We'll get into all of that next. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Is it football season yet?
Job! I don't want no job. I want to play football, you I want some feeling.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.